Welcome to season two of Beyond Beauty. I'm so excited. Where I talk with visionary artists who share their journeys, influences, and creative processes. My name is Jacqueline Cofield, and I research and study artistic praxis. This season brings together a wonderful and diverse lineup of voices, artists whose roots and cultural backgrounds shape the art they bring to the world. Each conversation reveals not just the artwork, but the personal and collective narratives that inspire it. Join me as we explore the intricate blend of heritage, creativity, and purpose that defines these remarkable women artists. Welcome to Beyond Beauty. Today, I'm joined by Luenel Havet, a multidisciplinary artist with Liberian roots, whose work is deeply rooted in courage and cultural heritage. Her journey took her from business studies to a creative calling that spans painting, sculpture, and digital media. For Luenel, creating is essential, a way of staying connected to herself and her roots. Join me as we explore her multidisciplinary approach and the thoughtful process that fuels her art. All right, everyone. Hello. Welcome back to Beyond Beauty. Let me just tell you, I'm having such a blast doing this podcast. Today, when I was preparing for our special guest, I was just reminded how much I love just talking to, learning from artists. And Luenel Havet is an incredible artist. I've just enjoyed learning so much about her. And I can't wait to see her practice continue to grow. I'm really honored to have Luenel Havet join us today. Thank you so much, Luenel, for making time. Where are you right now, by the way?
Thank you, Jacqueline. Yeah, I'm currently in Atlanta. It's gorgeous here. I'm kind of overlooking this gorgeous garden in Atlanta. So,
oh, wow. I was just there last month. That's so cool.
Was it for the art fair?
No, for a different conference. And
okay.
The weather was so beautiful. Although the first day I arrived, there was like a hurricane watch.
Oh, yeah. I remember that week.
Everything was canceled. Like schools and a lot of restaurants were closed. And
yeah.
And I was like, I don't think it's like going to get that bad downtown. And luckily it didn't get where I was. It didn't get too bad. But I heard some people, trees had fallen on houses and everything like that. So
yeah, it was pretty. It's really interesting because the weather kind of calms me a little bit, you know, when it's like that. It's really interesting. Like, it's just tornado out, but I'm like super calm. It just kind of makes me think a lot and just have space to go deep within my thoughts and explore my own inner world. But, you know, looking at the aftermath.
Absolutely. I mean, Mother Nature will definitely command attention every once in a while.
Exactly. 1,000%.
And then you really have to think through your whole life. Mother Nature will be like, nope, I'm still here. Don't disrespect. So, So thank you so much for being here with us. And I'm just going to dive right in. So I'm here at Teachers College, Columbia University, and the Digital Futures Institute. I am always thinking about the learning journey of creative people. And so your learning journey has involved multiple spaces, multiple identities. You're born in Liberia and raised in the United States. So I'm just curious if you could talk about, are there any significant moments in your childhood that you recall that opened your eyes to the possibilities of creative expression?
Yeah, absolutely. I traveled to the Ivory Coast when I may be wrong, but around four, give or take. And I spent a lot of my formative years in the Ivory Coast. And I remember in the beginning, I was trying to learn the language, right? Trying to learn how to read and write the language. And it wasn't always easy. Eventually, I got it. And now I speak and write French fluently. But in the beginning, it was very difficult. And I remember going to school and just, you know, kind of feeling ostracized because I couldn't communicate. I was already very introverted. I still am. And having to find words to say what I mean, it was just so daunting for me. So I remember we had this like day, it was kind of like an arts day or something like that. And there was this older boy who would draw and paint. And I remember like how he was able to communicate so effectively just by his talent. And I remember thinking, I can draw and paint and I can draw and paint like him. And, you know, if I'm able to do this, then I'll be able to communicate, you know, and that was kind of a portal for me to be able to express things that are conscious and on the subconscious. So creating for me has just been a way to express things that I don't always have the words for.
I love that. I mean, you've said a few things. Like, first of all, I'm thinking about like representation, the importance of representation. So interesting how many creative people were inspired by seeing someone else creative. And then we can go even deeper, seeing someone else who looks like them or share some aspect of identity being creative, and then that opening up the perspective around what's possible.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And then when you talked about the emotional roller coaster of learning a new language, that really resonated with me because I learned French too. Moi, je parle français aussi.
Of course, yeah. Ah, donc... Jacqueline.
Oui, en France, je m'appelle Jacqueline.
D'accord.
Yeah. And I mean, I studied abroad in undergrad, so I was like okay. An adult already. And I went to Paris through NYU in Paris, and it was like my first time even having a French class was in Paris. Mm. So I had like no preparation because growing up, I was studying Spanish. And I remember like at one point there were tears involved because I couldn't get this like one particular sound, but I refused to give up. Like I was like, nope, every day I'm here and I'm just going to keep going. And eventually it's like magic. Like one day I just was able to make it. It's a really humbling experience.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that from vulnerability comes like so many beautiful things. You know, I think it kind of develops several sides of us that we either didn't know was there or that we didn't think necessary. And I think having to learn a new language is kind of, you know, you kind of feel like a child, you kind of feel like you are having to learn how to communicate all over again. Mm. So it is definitely something that is kind of like, hey, I'm going to be vulnerable here and put myself out there and try to kind of learn this thing. So
yeah,
it's really interesting.
And when you talk about communicating, then it's like there's so many different ways to communicate, so many different ways to express different channels. And I, staying in the line of thinking about your learning journey, so then when you became a young adult and you're deciding to go to school, can you talk about what your interests were at that time when you went to college? What did you study? Why did you study that?
Yeah, of course. So when I went to school, I got a scholarship. I got a full scholarship and I studied business. And it's interesting. I majored in business and I didn't minor in art, but I didn't major in it. And it's interesting because I always wanted to be an artist, you know, but when you grow up in an African household like mine, not every African household is like this, but you will hear a lot of stories where it's like, these are the paths that you need to take. Mm-hmm. And this creative thing is kind of seen more as a hobby than something to take seriously, right? So it's kind of like doctor, lawyer, engineer, that kind of very kind of like, I like to call it like kind of very kind of square, like professions, like these are the things you have to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, I guess, you know, this is a kind of a cultural pressure and I'm getting a full ride. So why not just go ahead and study business? But yeah. I remember when I would go to the business and engineering complex every day, like I would see these like art kids, you know, like super cool with their like Doc Martin boots and like paint stains all over their life. And I'm like, I would be an artist. Like, So it was kind of like this thing where it's like, dang it. Like, I wish that was me. But here I was in like, you know, button down shirts and slacks going to business class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just kind of something I always wanted to. But even with that, I always, you know, I kept painting and I kept, even after I shifted more of a focus to towards my business. I was still painting and drawing and even selling my work. As a 19-year-old, I remember selling pieces. Even 12 years old, I was selling and making my work. So it's just something I've always done. I always knew that I wanted to be an artist despite, you know, everything else. So that's what it looks like for me. It's kind of touchy for me because I would be so emotional, you know, seeing those artists on campus. But yeah, that was just my path. And it's led me here. So I'm happy. I'm glad.
Yeah, when you say that, I was imagining the fear that maybe you might have felt around pursuing your dream and being an artist. Do you find that courage comes into play? Particularly in that those in your transition, finding yourself your way back to art?
Courage definitely does have a role to play in it, but I think being an artist for me comes more out of necessity. It's like, I have to do this thing or I'm going to lose my mind. You know, it's like, I just have to be an artist. Like, I have to paint. Like, I have to be in the studio. I have to draw, you know, all of these things. For me, it's not some, yeah, you know, be courageous and, you know, take this path and do these things. But I think for me, you know, I feel like it needs me, you know, it's kind of like just, it's just this thing I have to do. And I'm not really thinking about anything else.
Yeah.
So even if I'm terrified,
right,
you know?
Right. So many times we have to walk through the fears. I mean, I was terrified to start this podcast because I like to be behind the scenes, but in my dissertation research, I just found these conversations to be so meaningful. And I wanted to, I really believe in public pedagogy. And so I wanted to find a way to make this more these experiences more accessible for other people. You had these experiences young where you were inspired by young artists. You end up going to business, to studying business in college. And then out of necessity, you find your way that being an artist is like the only thing possible, the only way you can live and breathe. And I'm just wondering, when it comes to your mediums, you're multidisciplinary. You span across painting, sculpture, digital media. How do you navigate these different mediums? How do you choose? How do you know when you're going to do a particular type of work?
You don't always know. I think for me, it's kind of like there are certain things a drawing can express that a painting can't. There are certain things that digital media can express that a drawing can't. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's all about how can this tool, how can these materials express what I have to say in the way I have to say it? And so based on the answer to that question, helps me determine which materials I'm going to use.
So that's very interesting, this idea of the materials speaking. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, you know, I believe that with art, it's not so much about the subject matter. Yes, the subject matter does matter. But I think, especially when you see the work in person, you know, over the internet, it just kind of eliminates so many layers to the work. When you see the work in person, the effects that the materials have on the viewers, I think it's fundamental. Like with the installation I just did, I used certain materials because I knew that these materials conveyed this feeling. And so I think it's very important to think about materials in your work because, you know, the materials do speak, you know, the materials are what creates kind of the feeling that you're trying to portray and that you may or may not be able to control. But yeah, the materials do speak.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that because when you said that, I immediately thought about Walter Benjamin in The Age of Mechanical Reproduction, wrote about a loss of aura in the reproduction of images. So for example, like we see a photo of the Mona Lisa, every time we see that, there's like this loss of aura. And so I love how you're mentioning like there's something about being in person. There's a different experience when we're experiencing work digitally versus like the energetic nature of the encounter in person.
Exactly. 1,000%. I mean, I can imagine that. Remember, there's so many times that I've made a piece and, you know, it's been photographed and the photo is what they use to kind of, you know, talk about the work and promote the work. And it's just like, you know, I just wish people could see this in person because the photograph strips away so much of the work. Mm. You know, you just don't really get to see it. I think a photo of a work is just the idea of the work.
Mm-hmm. There's like a whole line of conversation we could go just with that. I'm going to evoke one of my professors here at Teachers College, Columbia University, Dr. Iona Litterat, who I studied semiotics with. And so it's very, very interesting to think about this ideas around reproduction of images, the loss of aura. And I'm wondering also about scale and immersivity, because you do some large scale installations. And so I'm wondering, like, when you're making large work, is there something that your body is going through or experiencing? How do you take note of that, navigate that?
Mm-hmm. Making large work as opposed to small work, I think is a lot more physical. And so with smaller pieces where you're using a lot of your mental and spiritual and emotional energy and maybe more energy that we're not yet aware of, I think with making large pieces and installations, you're using so much of your body that it's almost like more of everything about you goes into it, as opposed to, hey, you know, I'm just kind of thinking about this piece, making the small piece. And yes, even though there is a certain energy that goes into it, I think making large pieces, there's like a different energy that goes into it, physical included. But it's just, I enjoy it more, to be honest. I enjoy making installations and kind of like, you know, climbing up ladders and hanging things on the wall and things like that. So I think I definitely enjoy it more. Yeah.
So I imagine that this involves a lot of experimentation. Since you're a multidisciplinary artist working in many different mediums, different forms, different scale, I was wondering if you could talk about the role of experimentation in your practice.
I think it's necessary to create space to experiment. Always with work, like you don't want to be doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. But there is a fear that also comes after you've kind of like created this new piece with this new way or this new subject matter, or even, you know, drawn this person or drawn this thing in a way that you've never done before. Experimentation for me has kind of been what has helped me evolve quickly with my work. And help me conquer things that I never thought I could do. Like, I'm just like super into drawing now. Like, I just, before I would just do like rough sketches, you know, things like that before doing the work. But like, actually, like, just like a finished drawing as the final piece is mm-hmm. not something I've done up until quite recently. I mean, I was terrified to do it, you know, mm-hmm. but I think it's vital to not hesitate or not let fear creep in or not let fear control, I would say, when it comes to experimentation and, you know, trying different methods and trying different things when it comes to art making, because you don't want to be stuck in the same thing, you know?
I really appreciate this idea of experimentation being an opportunity for an accomplishment and experimentation yeah. being an opportunity to conquer and to build on your confidence. And so for all my teachers in the space, I think we should maybe think about experimenting more with students because it gives them these opportunities to build their confidence and to conquer and mm-hmm. to accomplish.
Yeah.
So how does space play a role in your creative process? Are there particular environments that you feel more connected to or conducive of creativity?
You know, it's interesting. Before making a piece, I have to be very careful about what I let in. I have to be very careful about the books I read, the media that I consume, the people I'm around, because all of that shows up in the work. And I think when your mind is cluttered, it's very difficult to hear the voice clearly that's in your head that's telling you this is how you need to do what you need to do. Because you're just dealing with so many things, right? You're trying to process so many things, even without realizing. So I limit, you know, how much I socialize, you know, right before I know I have like a huge project coming up. I'm careful about the music I listen to and the words in that music. I'm careful about the things that I watch, you know, in movies, which movies I watch, things like that. So in the beginning, you don't always know that these things are affecting you or how they affect you. And then eventually you start to pick up on that. And then as time goes on, you know how to automatically like not gravitate toward this thing. Like, let's say we're having a movie night. It's like, as soon as the thing starts, for some reason, I can just look at one, I can look at the first 3 seconds of a film and tell you this film is going to be this way. Mm. Like, I don't need to put this in my head. Like, I'm telling you, I don't know how.
Yeah.
But I can just, I don't, listen, it's weird. I can just, you know, do it. So yeah, just really careful about the conversations I'm having and things like that. So it's almost like a cleansing process mm-hmm. in the beginning.
You engage in critical assessment of your environment. You have self-reflection and self-care as an important part of the creative process. And I think that's fascinating. Just the idea that taking care of yourself, being aware of the living and non-living variables in the environment that you're encountering is so important.
Yeah.
And it also sounds like there's a bit of like what Dr. Celia Ruiz, Yolanda Celia Ruiz would call archaeology of self, where he's also digging a little bit inside of you and seeing like, what do you need? And so there's like a self-awareness as well. So speaking of environments and spaces, have you engaged in artist residencies?
No, I haven't. I am interested in doing a few residencies, but it's interesting because whenever there is a thing where I say, I want to do this residency because I want to be able to do this thing, I end up doing the thing anyway, fortunately. So it's kind of been a thing where, okay, let me complete these projects for this year. I have all of these projects lined up. I don't have the space or the time to do this residency at this place for X amount of time because I have an exhibition in Germany. I have an exhibition in New Mexico. Like I have an exhibition in New York. Like, you know, so it's kind of like has been projects back to back to back to back to back. So cutting out the space for a residency for like 6 months or a year kind of cuts into my work right now for the projects I have lined up. But I am hoping that eventually, you know, I am going to be able to make space for it, but things have just, I feel so fortunate about this, but things have just kind of picked up in a way that it's difficult to find time outside of making this new work for this new thing, you know?
As an artist with transnational experiences and identities, can you talk about the role that cultural fusion plays in your work?
Yes. It's really interesting because consciously and subconsciously, so much of what I've experienced goes into the work that I make. And sometimes I'm not even aware of what I'm doing. And so I step back and look at it. And I'm like, oh, okay, like this is the thing I'm trying to say. With the body and the figures, definitely my African, my West African experience comes up with certain looks of the work and certain like positioning of the figures and kind of certain ways I am influenced by Caravaggio and how he has like these really dark backgrounds and focus on lighting and shadow and these very dramatic kind of poses, I think reflect the influence that I've had being a part of the French culture and going to France and seeing all of these wonderful exhibitions and European also art. I think the way I am very kind of opened with the figures in my work, you know, I don't hesitate to talk about subjects that kind of may or may not be controversial, depending on who hears them, I think kind of reflects my American upbringing. And I'm sure there are layers and layers and layers of things that have happened in my life that affect my work from different cultures, but those are just the ones that I'm aware of as we speak.
Yeah. And you, in some of the works, you're addressing complex issues like race, gender, and power dynamics. How do you approach these, what could be considered sensitive subjects in your art? How do you take care of yourself through that process?
Wow. It's interesting. I think just being a woman living in the world we live in the society we live in, I think if you are aware of these kind of topics and these kind of ways of being, I think it automatically makes you kind of need to say something, right? And that's where I am with the work. It's like, people need to be aware. Like, I need to have these conversations. How do I take care of myself? I don't know if, you know, I think it's very difficult to be able to talk about the subjects in your art if you haven't experienced them or if you are not currently experiencing them, right? Mm-hmm. So as much as I may try to shield myself from having certain discussions with certain people who may not always think the way I do, I think those discussions are kind of necessary, because then it makes you aware that, hey, like, these are the issues that you're going to have to deal with, or these are the issues that are kind of at play in society at this moment. So as draining and as difficult and sometimes infuriating as these conversations or, you know, can be with certain people, I think they're necessary, you know, and it's difficult to protect yourself without kind of shutting yourself out from what's really happening, from reality, you mm-hmm. know? After I tried to practice self-care, meditation, things like that. But, you know, I don't think it's wise to try to kind of remove yourself or shield yourself from, you know, from things like that. I don't know.
What role does travel play in your understanding of these complex issues around power dynamics, race, and gender?
You know, I think a lot of times in the U.S., we do talk about issues that we have. I'll speak primarily with gender issues mm-hmm. that we're still trying to like combat, and we're still trying to kind of like understand, I think. I think we, as much as we're trying to say, hey, this is how things should be, I do think that it's kind of an evolution of understanding when it comes to, you know, gender relations, power dynamics, why people do the things they do, how people feel the way they do, you know, why these things are happening. I am hopeful that we're moving towards kind of like a better understanding of it. But it's interesting, you think it's problematic in the U.S. and then you travel to a lot of other countries and you realize that there are years, you know, they're just not at the same kind of like place mm-hmm. we are when it comes to having these discussions. Not every country, but quite a few countries, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So traveling for me, yes, very beneficial. Yes, opens my mind to so many things that I'm not aware of. But it also helps you understand that a lot of the world still deals with these things. In the U.S., we're dealing with these things too, but there's just so much work that still needs to be done, and not just in one place, but everywhere, you know, when it comes to these relationships, when it comes to these power dynamics, you know. But I don't want to sound like, hey, we're in the U.S., we know better kind of thing. I think there is so much that can also be taken from other cultures when it comes to, and I'll speak primarily with gender relations and power and things like that, because there are some things that they have figured out and we don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, it's just kind of like a learning thing, seeing how things are different, you know, where they're worse and where they're better.
Yeah.
So traveling for me is just kind of like learning and studying and things like that.
Absolutely. It's like data collection. And with my research.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, and then it becomes like part of your lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's that aspect as well. What questions are currently guiding or inspiring your practice?
Oh, wow. Questions that I believe have been asked for centuries. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, my main kind of focus right now is on why gender relations are the way they are. What does having power look like for a man? What does having power look like for a woman? What is this whole thing about identity? And is it even a thing? Is it not just a construct? And is the solution, you know, kind of getting rid of what we understand identity to be and just focusing on individuals, right? I feel like getting rid of, you know, labels and this is your identity. This is the thing that's assigned to you. Because for so many different things, right? It's hard to say, oh yeah, this is 100% me, right? I feel like maybe starting there, kind of deconstructing what we understand identity to be, can kind of be like, you know, can start to answer the questions we have about power and gender relationship.
Wow. That question, what does power look like? I feel like that could be like a whole podcast.
It's so many different things for so many different people, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you even have to think about different disciplines. I mean, it's like, what does power look like in architecture? What does power look like in music? What does power look like in finance? I mean, there's so many different, you could really, it's an interdisciplinary conversation that's super fascinating. And I would imagine would be immensely stimulating in terms of like for creativity.
Oh, it's so stimulating. I love having conversations like that. Like, I absolutely love it, you know? And also the challenge that comes with it, challenging the ways that we think about these power dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the role that they play, how they influence our identities, as you've mentioned.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I like to end off with asking you about advice that you have for other emerging women artists. So what lessons have you learned that you feel would be invaluable for someone just starting out, particularly a young emerging woman artist who's exploring themes of identity and cultural heritage in their work?
I would say surround yourself with people who feed your work. But not only that, surround yourself with people who also challenge your way of thinking in a general way, you know, in a way that pushes you to go beyond what you know. Because I think ultimately challenge is what makes the work better. And I would also say, this is like a very kind of like concrete advice, I would say, make sure you have knowledge on how to run a business as much as you can. So maybe get someone who could help you.
Oh, back to the business degree.
Listen, it is vital. I'm telling you, it's so important. It's really important. You know, I mean, if you are considering, you know, an artist, a business, it may just be something you do for fun. But if it's, you know, if it's something you want to do full time, I think understanding the business of it is so important. It's like half the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I love how your journey has been. It's just got its own pattern. It's not a linear path. You're an interdisciplinary practitioner. And I love that you started out in business too. I mean, it shows that, and how, look at how it's helpful to you now, but that also shows that there's so many different paths to arriving at a place in that where we want to be in terms of like our dreams and aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to always say, a career is about the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be so like caught up in like the day-to-day, think about like the big picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, this has been a really awesome conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Luenel. Of course, I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Luenel Havet, for sharing your journey with us today. Your story, shaped by your Liberian heritage and unbreakable connection to art, brings forward the importance of creating as a means of survival and self-expression. The way that you approach each medium, thoughtfully selecting the tools that best convey your message, serves as a profound reminder of art's transformative power. To our listeners, I hope Luenel's insights inspire you to embrace your own stories and to create with intention, finding strength in your own roots. Until next time on Beyond Beauty, may you stay true to your journey, honoring the courage and resilience that make each creation unique.